today we read from Paul's description of church ministers, namely bishops and deacons. And then in the gospel, we see an example of what church ministers and by extension all Christians should be concerned about, that is, concern for the poor, represented by the poor widow, the widow whose only son had died. So let's start by looking a little bit at these church offices. The first part of the reading, the first reading is about bishops, the qualifications of bishops, and then the second part is about the deacons. Remember that the first offices in the church were the apostles. That was the first ministers established by Jesus himself. But they knew, even from the beginning, that they couldn't be the only ones. There had to be successors, and the successors of the apostles are the bishops. It's clear from the scriptures. So that's one of the divinely established institutions in the church, is the office of bishop. The term in Greek is episkopoi, meaning overseers. And sometimes the Bible translators, they use that term overseers, because bishop nowadays, it connotates something specifically hierarchical, you know, with the mitre and all the trappings, and they're afraid that it might distort what is meant by the scriptures. I think that's unfortunate, because it really does mean the office of bishop. The overseers really are the bishops that we have now. The structures, of course, develop over time, and the ceremonial trappings, but it's exactly the same office. Now, bishops have a lot of qualifications, and not many people actually qualify. I think I've said this many times, but you know, there's a shortage of bishops in the church, partly because there aren't that many qualified men, and partly because even those who are qualified, sometimes they don't accept the office. So there are many dioceses, even here in the Philippines, that are still waiting for a bishop to be appointed. This reading starts out, whoever aspires to the office of bishop desires a noble task. Well, not many people aspire to the office, because maybe a young man or someone who thinks it would be great to be a leader and stand in front of everybody with authority. But most priests realize it's a very heavy burden. It's a thankless task. There's a lot of responsibility and not much gain. And so it's a real sacrifice to accept the office of bishop. Taking on responsibility is not one of the strong points of modern culture, as you know. Making commitments is not one of the things that appeals to modern people, even in the church. So this is one of the reasons why we pray for bishops, because they do have a big responsibility and they need prayer support. Now, one of the things that might surprise a modern reader is that it says that the bishops should be married only once, when the practice of the church is that bishops are not married at all. But the point here is that it is theoretically possible for a married man to be ordained a bishop, and it's happened in church history. But the practice of the church from way, way back, in fact, from biblical times, was to ordain unmarried men, and that has extended also to the role of the priests to ordain only unmarried men. Now, in the Eastern Rite churches, the Eastern Orthodox and the Catholic Eastern Rite churches, they do sometimes ordain married men to the priesthood, but even in the Eastern Rite churches, the bishops are always unmarried. So not married only once, not married at all. Partly because of the responsibility, but also because of the profound reality that a bishop is married to the church. A bishop is a representative of the groom, Jesus Christ. The church is the bride, and that is his marriage. That's why bishops wear a ring. It's a symbol of authority, but it's also a symbol of their marriage to the church. You know, bishops have a special ring, and when you greet a bishop, you kiss his ring. That's part of the, it's not in the Bible, but it's part of the symbolism. Now, the next of the holy orders mentioned in this reading is the deacons. And you might say, well, what about the priests? Well, the bishops were established right away because that was the apostles. Deacons were established right away, even while the apostles were still in the upper room. Remember, that was when not in the upper room. And that was the replacement of Judas. When there was a dispute about the distribution of goods in the early church, and they started choosing deacons, the term for deacon in the Greek is servants. Diakonia is service, the diakonoi are the servants. So there's the overseers and the servants. But very soon, and so we'll get to that in a minute, but what about priests? The priests in the scriptures are usually referred to as the presbyteroi, that is the elders. And they were seen as assistants to the bishop or representatives of the bishop, because the bishop couldn't do it all, and it was clear that he needed to have more people doing his work. So that was the priests, and that's what priests are now. Priests are cooperators with their bishops, representatives of the bishops. The deacons have a special role. I just think it's worth mentioning this because just a couple of days ago, it was in the news, you probably saw, that the Holy Father approved the bishops of the request of the Bishops' Conference of the Philippines to establish a permanent diaconate in the Philippines, that is, married men ordained as deacons, which has not been the practice here. I guess it's never been the practice here. Now, we do have a married deacon who comes here every week, you know, Deacon Rolando, but he was ordained in the United States, where married deacons, what we call permanent deacons, are very, very common there. There's thousands and thousands of them. There might even be more deacons than priests there. I don't really remember. But in the Philippines, no. So I'm just mentioning this because it'll be a new thing, and over the years, maybe it will take a while to get the formation program and all the necessary steps in place before any married men are ordained deacons. But it is a possibility in the church that a married man can be ordained as a servant of the church, as a deacon. Now, one last thing about this reading. There's a description of the deacons, and it says they can't be addicted, they have to be, you know, dignified people, they have to be put to the test. And then it says women similarly should be dignified. Now, this term women has created a little bit of controversy because it's not clear. The Greek word is really women. Women should be dignified, not slanderers, but temperate and faithful and everything. And the question is, well, why do they suddenly talk about women here when he's talking about deacons? So some scholars think that they're talking about the wives of the deacons, because the term for women in Greek can also be translated as wives. That might, and in some Bibles, if you look it up, it says the wives should be dignified, not slanderers, etc. But other scholars think that it's talking about women servants of the church, deaconesses. And as you know, that's a controversial term and a controversial idea, that there could be women who have some kind of a role of official ordained ministry. Now, the church has not practiced ordination of women at any level, bishop, priest, or deacon, but there have been women with official roles of service, and in some times, especially in the early church, they were called deaconesses because that was the word for servant. Servant, or a male servant, deacon, female servant, deaconess. The one thing that's clear from the studies is that when it came to baptism, the deacons, who were the ones doing the baptisms, and since baptism was by immersion, it was more appropriate for women to baptize the women. So that was more a matter of prudence than respect and modesty. That it had nothing to do with taking roles of authority in the church. So I'm just mentioning that because there's a lot of talk about deacons nowadays in the Philippines, a lot of questions. What is this permanent diaconate? And it's nice we have an example of one coming here, right here in the parish, but most people don't know what a permanent deacon is and how it's possible for a married man to be dressed up in vestments and serving at the altar. Well, that comes from the scriptures, and it's long-standing practice. Now, enough about the church ministers, you notice that the idea of the church ministers is they should be qualified to serve. The purpose of their being called and ordained is for the service of the people. That's why you don't want people who are going to be scandalous or who are going to be irresponsible or immature. You want people who are can put themselves at the service of the church. And in today's gospel, we see Jesus moved with compassion for a widow whose only son has died. It's a sign to us of what church ministers, and as I said, by extension, all Christians should have, not just building up one's own kingdom or taking care of oneself or making a case for one's own holiness or dignity, but to be at the service of others. So Jesus has his mission, he's going to the city, and he encounters this funeral procession, and his response is he's moved with pity for the widow, the widowed mother. He's concerned for the poor, the poorest of the poor. Remember, widows in that time were the poorest of the poor, and a widow without a son was even poorer than the other widows. No one to provide for her. And so, out of compassion for the mother, he raises the boy, the son. It's as if the miracle isn't really for the man who was dead, it's for the mother. It's a sign of Jesus' power over life and death. Yes, it's a miracle that was just awe-inspiring to the onlookers. And there were large crowds following Jesus, and there was a large crowd in the funeral procession, so a lot of people saw this miracle take place. And they recognize God is at work in this prophet Jesus. Now, this is also this miracle of the raising of the son of the widow has also been interpreted as a revelation of the church. The church is represented by the widow, and the church is poor. The church is the community of the anoim, the helpless ones, the people who are dependent on God. No hope, no possibilities, except in God. And how does God provide for the church? Well, the Father sends the Son and gives the Son life. So the resurrection of Jesus Christ, who is the groom for the church, he's the one, that's the sign that the church has possibility. So the poverty and the impossibility of the church is overcome by the power of God over sin and death. Sometimes people point to the experience of the Blessed Virgin Mary. She was a widow who lost her only son. She was the grieving widow at the foot of the cross. We just celebrated her feast day last week. Sorrowful Mother. Our Lady of Sorrows. But her sorrow was overcome by the resurrection. She was given her son again, like this widow was, and in a greater way than this widow. So what Mary experienced by the resurrection, the gift of new life in her son, is what the church experiences when we celebrate the resurrection. We are given a whole new possibility of life. Church ministers are supposed to be instruments of this gift of new hope, new possibility, new life. The reason for living is not just to establish ourselves securely here or to live forever here. We're made for a life beyond this world, and it's a life on the other side of death. So if we're responding to the grace that God gives us, we keep our eyes fixed on that eternal goal, and we make our hope and our joy in that goal available to others. So we are people of the resurrection, people of the joy of new life. Even as we journey through the trials of this life, including death itself, and we have our sister's remains right here before the altar, even as we experience losses like this, our hearts remain hopeful and joyful because of the power of God over death, witnessed here in Jesus raising the young man, but even more in his own resurrection from the dead and his life, his living forever. So the great gift of eternal life is at the center of the message of the gospel. It's the center of the gift of the church to the world.